Welcome, everyone, to the second episode of Tech Talk, which is going to focus on the role of whole genome sequencing today and its role in the new era of smarter food safety. Thank you for joining us. I'm really excited about today's session. My name is Frank Yannis, FDA's Deputy Commissioner for the Office of Food Policy and Response. In this podcast series, we're focusing on technology and how it can be used by FDA, along with others in government, academia, and the industry, to help what I call bend the curve of foodborne illness in this country once and for all. And we're doing that, and we're going to do that. Our first podcast looked at tech-enabled traceability, the first of four core elements in FDA's new era of smarter food safety, which we issued one short year ago. Today's podcast, we're going to focus on the second core element called smarter tools and approaches for prevention and outbreak response. This core element covers a lot of ground if you've read our blueprint. So today we're going to focus on the increased use of whole genome sequencing in both the public and private sectors and what they might mean to food safety. Now let me begin with what is one of my favorite questions that I like to ask audiences all over the world when I present at conferences. And that question is this: name the number one thing that you think has advanced food safety into the 21st century. The number one thing that has advanced food safety into the 21st century. When I ask that question, literally, of international audiences all over the world, I get some interesting answers. Some say it's HACCP, Hazard Analysis of Critical Control Points, vetted by NASA and Pillsbury, which we all know has been critical to helping companies better manage food safety risks. At times, I hear people say, well, more modern regulations, such as the Food Safety Modernization Act and FSMA. I've also heard answers from microbiologists, such as rapid microbiological testing of foods, that has taken food safety from the petri dish and allowed us to obtain results in almost real time or more realistic timeframes. And while I think all of these answers are good, and clearly I believe they've probably all played a role in advancing food safety, my favorite answer is these three short letters, WGS. And before that, it was PFGE, pulsed field gel electrophoresis, the predecessor to WGS. Now, why do I feel that way? Well, it's this idea that we can increasingly detect what might have previously appeared to be sporadic or unrelated illnesses across the country. And because of these genetic sequencing techniques, now we know that these seemingly unrelated illnesses are increasingly having something in common. And oftentimes in investigations, we find out that it's a common food. In other words, I like to say that whole genome sequencing has increasingly allowed us to make the invisible visible. And that's a good thing. And it has allowed us to detect outbreaks that have might have previously gone undetected. It's allowed us to discover outbreaks linked to novel foods. And I think without question, it has allowed us to identify outbreaks earlier in their epidemic curve and prevent additional illnesses. So I'm pretty excited about today's topic. I'm going to turn this over to our experts. FDA has been at the forefront of encouraging the use of WGS in government labs at the state, federal, and international levels. That work, as I've understood it, has dated back to 2008, years before I actually joined FDA. Unfortunately, today you're going to hear from someone who's been there since the beginning, Eric Brown, Director of the Division of Microbiology in CSFAN's Office of Regulatory Science, who has passionately pioneered this important work since day one. And joining him, you're going to hear from Mark Moorman, another expert who directs our Office of Food Safety and FDA Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. And he also leads core element two of the blueprint. Together, they're going to lead what I believe is going to be a fascinating and useful discussion. They're also going to engage top experts from outside of FDA and the potential of WGS to transform both food safety detection, but also food safety prevention. And at the end of the discussion, I'll look forward to returning and sharing some of my key takeaways, which I'm sure are going to be quite a few. But before I do, I'd like to begin by asking both Mark and Eric to explain in just a few short sentences what they see as the vital role that WGS plays in the foods arena. Mark?
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Before I start, let me just saying to everyone that's new to this topic of WGS, we're talking about whole genome sequencing. And this is just that. It's the whole genetic sequence of bacteria. Just like everybody listening, if we sequenced everybody's genetic material and we would all be proven different, we now have the ability to do that same thing with bacteria. And this is a new tool in the microbiologist toolbox. It gives us just profound ways to understand relationships of pathogenic microorganisms to foods and to outbreaks. And really the beauty of this and the power of this is because we're talking about genetic sequences in the form of data, we have the ability to capture and share that information globally with a click of a mouse. So to answer your question, Frank, this really gives a couple groups some powerful tools. First, in the public health community, it gives them a tool to attribute patient illness to foods. And just as importantly, it gives another group, the entire discipline of food microbiology, we're talking academia, industry, testing labs, which is an amazingly powerful tool to determine the ecology or the movement of these microorganisms and how these strains of public health significance or spoilage relevance finds their way in and around foods.
Thanks, Mark. I couldn't agree more. And Eric, what do you have to say?
Absolutely, Frank. Thank you. This is Eric. Building on what Mark said, the thing about whole genome sequencing is that it actually collects all of the DNA code from inside a bacteria. And because of that fact, it's got the power to differentiate virtually all strains of foodborne pathogens, no matter what the species. The best part is that it discriminates between really closely related organisms. And so it can quickly point to the specific geographic locale of a pathogen, and it also points to a pathogen's likely point of origin. The result of all this, we can now identify the source of an outbreak sooner and avoid additional illnesses and possibly even deaths. Also, in the spirit of the New Era Initiative, I just wanted to add that whole genome sequencing is really giving us insight into root cause analysis, where there's recurring contamination on a farm or a food facility. So it's really like Mark said, whole genome sequencing is a really special tool, and we're really excited to talk about it today. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Eric. You can see this is going to be a very interesting session. So with that, I'm going to let you guys take it away from here, and I'll see you on the other side. Mark, over to you.
All right. Thanks, Frank. Yeah, we are really excited and fortunate today to be joined by some experts that are going to help us unpack all this. Bill Wolfgang, who's with the New York State Department of Health's Division of Infectious Diseases. We also have Sherry Shea, who's the Director of Food Safety with the Association of Public Health Laboratories, or APHL. And Afreen Malik, who's the Science Programs Director with the Western Growers, which represents farmers in Arizona, California, Colorado, and New Mexico. Bill, Sherry, and Afreen, thank you for joining us. Before we get into the WGS of the future, let's begin with a brief overview of WGS today and really how we got here. And let me start with Bill. Bill, the state of New York was really an early adopter of WGS, and I'd be interested in knowing what was your wow moment, where New York said, well, there's something special here, and you realize this technology would be a game changer in food safety. Can you talk about that?
Sure, Mark. And before I do, let me just thank Mark, Eric, and Mark for the opportunity to participate in this podcast. This is simply an extension of a long collaboration we've had with FDA in our work to improve food safety. A collaboration that, as you'll see, started in 2012, and a collaboration I value very much for a lot of reasons. It's really been a terrific ride, and I appreciate your support over all these years. So what was our wow moment? So often in science, there's not really a wow moment. It's really gradual. But in this case, I can actually point to a wow moment. That is when I read two papers in 2011, one by Mark Allard's group out of CIFSAN, and a second by Martin Wiedemann's group from the Food Safety Lab at Cornell. And what they showed in these papers was that for an outbreak of Salmonella montevideo associated with black and red pepper and meat, dried meat products, that WGS provided a far higher resolution than the current gold standard at the time, which is what we were using in our labs, of course, of pulsed field gel electrophoresis, or PFGE. This increased resolution allowed then greater information to be passed on to epidemiologists to address issues of traceback and source attribution. Coincidentally, at that time, we had also just purchased our first high-throughput sequencer capable of sequencing a bacterial genome in a time frame and at a cost that was suitable for surveillance. These hadn't existed before 2011. So with these two pieces of information and our new tools, we set about to sequence a salmonella outbreak associated with cannoli consumption in a long-term care facility. This was an outbreak of salmonella enteritis, the most common serotype, and the PFG type was also extraordinarily common. So the epidemiologists had a slam dunk here. Somebody was very nice. They brought some cannolis in for their aging parents or whatever into the facility, and a number of the residents became ill. But the PFG was of no use whatsoever because it was so general, it was so common. Every half the isolates around there at that time were identified by PFG as the same, so it couldn't provide additional information. When we used WGS to look at this outbreak, we saw that indeed the patients were all closely related at the long-term care facility, but remarkably, there were people outside the care facility in the surrounding community, about twice as many people, that also had the same clone of Salmonella enteritidis. Therefore, WGS allowed us to expand would have allowed expansion of the outbreak investigation had it been available at the time. And as Frank mentioned earlier, this was a clear case of making the invisible now visible. So with this data and with this project under our arms, Dr. Kimberly Musser and I traveled to CIFSAN, where we were invited to present our findings to the genome tracker folks there. We didn't know this at the time, but after the talk, we were said, Mark and Eric got us aside and said, do you want to join the genome tracker collaboration? We'll get you a sequencer and support you for reagents, and also provide, importantly, training on the sequencing. Of course, we said yes, and we haven't looked back since. It's been a wonderful collaboration, and we're very grateful for the opportunity to work with FDA on this project.
Oh, fantastic, Bill. Thank you. Let's shift gears for a minute and talk about how laboratories think about this. There's the FDA's Genome Tracker, which is a distributed network of laboratories that use whole genome sequencing to identify the foodborne outbreaks. And Sherry, you and the APHL has played an enormous role in expanding Genome Tracker Network to the states since it was launched in 2012. Can you talk about why this has been such a priority for APHL, and what do you see as the outcome?
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for the opportunity to be part of this discussion. It's a pleasure to be with this group today. You know, APHL has been a strong proponent of Genome Tracker really from the very beginning. Whole genome sequencing was bringing revolutionary changes to microbiology, including public health microbiology. And the state laboratories were going to miss the boat without rapid deployment of resources, personnel, training, and equipment, some of the things Bill just mentioned, not to mention huge needs around data. Adequate ways to handle big data were almost non-existent in 2012, at least in the public health setting. So remarkably, from 2010 to 2015, the United States went from zero states owning a sequencer to 37 laboratories with instruments installed, thanks to federal investments and state partners. And shortly thereafter, every state and even many local laboratories were sequencing foodborne pathogens. Honestly, we can look even beyond food safety. That early buildup of sequencing capability meant our country was more prepared to sequence SARS-CoV-2 in response to the ongoing pandemic. That's a pretty clear example of having the right priorities at the right time. So yes, Genome Tracker, along with CDC's PulseNet network, have been course-changing for APHL members. One could say the inclusion of state laboratories in the Genome Tracker network from the very beginning was key to the success of the network. From that starting point, FDA's eagerness to collaborate with APHL, with the state laboratories, with so many other partners in private and academic settings, ensured, in my mind, the maximum impact of all of our work together. We, of course, hope APHL's work in support of the network provides a better genome tracker experience for the states and for the team at FDA. It's all a great example of what mutual reliance can look like. I also want to mention quickly the role of NCBI, where the publicly available sequence database is held. Our members very much appreciate the NCBI pathogen detection browser as a fundamental tool for public health surveillance. Really, as we see things, by leveraging Genome Tracker's collaboration with the food industry and people like Afrin, FDA can provide data on safe growing and manufacturing processes, they can inform risk attribution, and most importantly, we decrease the burden of foodborne illness. And it's that reduction in illnesses that's really the outcome all of us working in public health are looking for.
Excellent. Thank you, Sherry. So we've heard from the public health lens of this and the laboratory lens. I want to move to an application side of this. And Afrin, you think a lot about applications with your work within produce and food processing. And we'd like to get a sense from you as to how widely is this technology understood in industry? And for those that have adopted it, how are they using it?
Well, good morning, Mark, and everyone else. It's a pleasure to be here with everyone, and I really appreciate the opportunity to participate in this discussion. To answer your question, Mark, I'll begin with stating that whole genome sequencing is of great interest to the produce industry. We're all talking about it and trying to understand what it means and what it can tell us. This becomes particularly important during outbreak investigations when a link is made between a clinical isolate and a suspected food vehicle and the subsequent root cause investigation that occurs. But despite this interest, whole genome sequencing is not widely used in the produce industry. And there are many reasons for this, right? So first, whole genome sequencing in many cases is not the best suited tool for a lot of the testing that we're currently conducting. There are other simpler and more familiar subtyping tools that are sufficient for our needs. But when whole genome sequencing is used, it's more often applied within facilities, not open field agriculture, for things like root cause analysis or to study microbiomes in a particular environment or to study spoilage bacteria for shelf life analysis, for example. So there are many reasons for this somewhat slow adoption of whole genome sequencing in the produce industry. The most obvious reasons have to do with cost and the amount of time it takes for whole genome sequencing compared to other more familiar methods available to the produce industry. With fresh perishable products, where the shelf life is often no greater than 14 days, the time from sampling to results is too long for whole genome sequencing. Waiting 1 week, for example, is not practical in the produce industry. So there are other more significant hurdles as well to the use of whole genome sequencing. So although I think it's generally recognized that whole genome sequencing is a powerful tool, it requires a level of understanding and expertise that is generally lacking in the industry at present. We're slowly overcoming this hurdle through external partnerships to help us understand the terminology, the methodologies, the interpretation of whole genome sequencing data, and to dispel some of the misconceptions surrounding whole genome sequencing. But even with outsourcing, you still need some level of expertise in-house. To add to this, there are regulatory and legal issues an operation must consider before using a tool that may potentially link their operation to a past outbreak. Using whole genome sequencing could potentially expose an operation to some risks, such as a recall or even lawsuits. So there are a lot of challenges to broad adoption of whole genome sequencing in the produce industry, and I think these challenges will take time to overcome. I think the FDA certainly has a role to play in making the adoption of whole genome sequencing and other NGS technologies easier in the produce industry. One way to do this, I think, besides addressing the uncertainties around the regulatory burden, would be to maybe change the context around whole genome sequencing. And what I mean by this is that maybe we can provide some examples that show how whole genome sequencing might be used to exonerate an operation in a foodborne outbreak. This positive context may increase confidence in the use of whole genome sequencing. The FDA could also help by adding some more transparency to the NCBI database. Currently, there's very limited metadata associated with isolates, and it lends itself very well to speculation. With more transparency, I believe the database could be more useful.
Excellent. Efrain, thank you very much. Appreciate this. Eric, over to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thanks, everyone, for the first round. Very nice. I'd like to start with the second round of questions and really turn our attention now to a subject near and dear to the New Era Initiative, and that is root cause analysis and how WGS helps state and industry laboratories identify causes and sources of contamination. And again, we'd like to start off with Bill. Bill, the state of New York was not only an early adopter of WGS, it also was one of the first state partners to join the Genome Tracker Network, which you pointed out a moment ago. My question is, so how has technology really advanced root cause analysis for your public health mission and outbreak response work?
Well, thanks, Eric. As I mentioned previously, in the last example, of course, we could reveal relationships that weren't present before using whole genome sequencing. But now I want to move to an example of how we could use whole genome sequencing to distinguish between persistent contamination at a facility by a single clone from its repeated introduction. So from June 2014 to April 2019, over a five-year period, Wadsworth received 9 clinical and 10 environmental samples of Listeria monocytogenes linked to a food preparation and delivery establishment. Over that time, the PFG pattern remained the same for all those samples, but because of the low resolution of PFG, it wasn't possible to say that the same type of PFG wasn't just being reintroduced repeatedly from an outside source. Of course, your efforts at remediation would be very different, whether it was persisting in the facility or whether it was being reintroduced. Once WGS technology was brought to bear on the problem, we could unequivocally demonstrate that the same clone of Listeria was repeatedly contaminating the food produced by the service over that five-year period, ruling out at least indicating a very low likelihood that the pathogen was being reintroduced during this long time frame. The lessons we learned, and others of course have learned from similar sort of studies, is that long-term surveillance by WGS can identify outbreaks resulting from persistent contamination by the same clone over many years. As always, WGS data must be considered in the context of epidemiological data. In this case, the link to a single food handling facility of a single genetic clone of Listeria indicates long-term persistence at the facility and not sporadic reintroductions. I would also add that after extensive remediation, we have seen no further outbreaks associated with this facility.
Fantastic. Thank you, Bill. That's a great example, certainly for root cause. Sherry? Let's build on the great info that Bill just gave us. Let's talk a little bit more about root cause and pathogen source tracking, which are clearly the sweet spots for this technology. And really, I mean, from your position, you can see the entire enterprise across the state. How do you see whole genome sequencing being utilized by our state partners in their regular workflow? And maybe even sort of throw in an example of where you've seen whole genome sequencing expedite the identification of the source of a foodborne outbreak for one of your state and federal stakeholders. Thank you.
Great questions, Eric. Thanks. I can think of many use cases for whole genome sequencing in the public health setting. We can look at environmental exposures from pathogens such as Cryptosporidium or Legionella. We can perhaps follow transmission pathways of hospital-acquired infections and prevent their spread. We can even predict how pathogens might become resistant, stopping emerging pathogens like resistant tuberculosis and Salmonella infantis before they wreak havoc on human health. So whole genome sequencing has transformed the investigation of infectious diseases broadly, just as it has improved the safety of our food supply. Of course, there are costs involved with all of this. The sequencing transformation affects the entire laboratory enterprise, right? It's not just one department. And it must take into consideration sustainability, workforce development, financial inputs. There's so much thought and planning that goes into this at the state laboratory. As for an example, many states have effectively used sequencing to expedite large multi-state outbreak investigations, like the ones that might hit the news, as well as local investigations that can help, you know, perhaps a small restaurant and improve their practices. One investigation involving the state of Rhode Island was pretty interesting. I think it was in early 2019, an outbreak of E. coli 026 grew to 21 cases in 9 states. And early case interviews during that investigation were pointing to contaminated all-purpose flour. And in an open bag of that implicated flour, the Rhode Island Public Health Laboratory found a genetic match to the patient isolate, a connection later supported by product distribution records. Whole genome sequencing was crucial during this investigation as the PFGE pattern, the old method we've mentioned a few times today, the PFG pattern of this strain historically corresponded to ground beef. So in this case, public health professionals could easily delineate outbreak-related isolates using the whole genome sequencing technology, bringing that outbreak to an end with minimal illnesses and also limiting the economic impact on the producer, the important ideas, Eric, that you brought up at the beginning of the talk today. So I think examples like these demonstrate that the investment in whole genome sequencing technology at the state level, along with IT infrastructure and bioinformatics support behind it, are having far-reaching impacts on food safety.
Wonderful to hear. Thank you, Cheryl. All right, my last question is for Afreen. Afreen, look, for sure, one of our new era of smarter food safety efforts is to increase the adoption of recalls analysis by industry. Now, you touched on this a bit in your last answer, but let's drill down a little bit more on the importance of whole genome sequencing in RCAs, or root cause analysis. So I have a two-part question for you. First, to what extent do produce growers and producers really see whole genome sequencing as a valuable tool in root cause analysis? And second, if I may, do large and small growers think of it and use it in similar ways or different ways? Do you see a difference there in the size of the industries that are using it?
That's a great question. So as I mentioned previously, I think the industry already sees the value of whole genome sequencing as a tool for root cause analysis and for pathogen source tracking. So for example, one of the ways whole genome sequencing is currently being used is in environmental monitoring programs within produce facilities to determine if recurring positives for a pathogen in an area is a transient contamination or a resident strain. Other uses have to do with risk assessments on a farm. So for example, if your farm is adjacent to a risk factor, such as a composting facility or a concentrated animal feeding operation, how does this risk factor affect the microbiome within your farm as compared to a farm that doesn't have these adjacent risk factors? So whole genome sequencing can be useful in these types of scenarios, and it's currently being used by the produce industry in this way. To answer the second part of your question, I think that there's certainly a difference in how this tool is currently being used and applied by larger versus smaller operations. Since the use of whole genome sequencing requires specific resources, we kind of touched on this previously, but specific resources both in terms of understanding how the testing works and how to interpret the results. These resources are generally more available in larger operations, and therefore whole genome sequencing is more likely to be adopted by larger operations first. But I think it's important to note that there are mechanisms to exchange such information between operations of different sizes through the supply chain that can facilitate the adoption of whole genome sequencing by smaller operations over time. And in addition to the size of operations, I think there's another layer in terms of variation in use of whole genome sequencing by the produce industry. As mentioned earlier, whole genome sequencing is being used in processing and packing facilities more than in the farm environment. This makes sense when you think about the variables in a facility versus those in the open field environment. We have much more control in a closed facility environment than we do in the open farm environment. So I think that that's where the application of whole genome sequencing is being applied the most in the facility. But irrespective of the size and type of operation, I think everyone understands that whole genome sequencing is a game changer and something that we really need to pay attention to in the produce industry.
Thank you, Afreen. Mark, back to you for the third and final round.
All right, excellent. Well, thanks, Eric. So we've heard a lot about this today about the current use of whole genome sequencing, and I want to pivot now to what the future looks like. And we heard about how the New York State Department of Health has integrated WGS into its food safety surveillance and response program. And Bill, wondering how is it transforming the Department of Health's work for other public health areas out involving outbreak surveillance and traceback? Can you talk to that?
Absolutely, Mark. Thanks for the opportunity again. As we've seen so clearly in the last year and a half, for public health laboratories, the future can be uncertain. While we cannot predict future public health developments, we can prepare for them by having on hand cutting-edge technologies. And this is just exactly what happened at the Wadsworth. When COVID hit, we were already sequencing large numbers of isolates for various surveillance activities, so it was not difficult to pivot and start to sequence COVID. Actually, I believe we started sequencing in late March after the shutdown in the middle of March. We've now sequenced over, I want to get this right, I think 13,000 COVID genomes as a result of our activities there. But apart from COVID, we are also working to extend our technologies and expertise to other foodborne pathogens, such as Clostridium perfringens, Bacillus cereus, and we're thinking about moving into Yersinia enterocolitica. We have also started to look at the population structure of Listeria monocytogenes in New York State. We are in the process of building a comprehensive genomic database of all Listeria genomes. It will be about approximately 2,500 of them, collected since 2000 to now, received by us and three other collaborating New York State institutions. We hope such data will aid our epidemiologists, and this is a work in progress, by answering some questions. Are outbreaks local or are pathogens frequently imported? Do we see new sources or exposure hazards? Are genetic types regionally localized? And how many clusters do we see? And how many clusters have we missed through our current surveillance system? By learning from the past to the answers to these sorts of questions, we hope to aid our epidemiologists in future investigations. Finally, application of WGS technology to foodborne diseases was first in our lab, absolutely, but it's certainly not been the last. We've now extended that approach to surveillance of Legionella, TB, hospital-acquired infections, particularly those related to antimicrobial resistance, and viruses in addition to COVID. And in fact, I think it's a little immodest to say, but I think in many of these areas, we're acting as national leaders in these investigations. So for the Wadsworth and Fate and other federal and state laboratories, I don't see there's any turning back. There's no indication that we're going to slow down our sequencing. If anything, it's going to keep ramping up. We've just bought additional robotics to increase our throughput, as well as additional machines. So starting from a single FDA-supported MiSeq, we have over the past 9 years acquired, through other funding sources I might add, 10 additional high-throughput sequencers and commensurate increases in staffing. So for us anyway, WGS is our future, and we certainly plan to pursue it vigorously.
Excellent, Bill. Thank you. Sherry, we just heard Bill say that there's no turning back, and APHL has been central to the expansion of the Genome Tracker Network. And I'd like to building on what Bill said, ask you what new directions or next steps would you like APHL like to see from the Genome Tracker Network? And if it could be expanded, what new scientific or application-based areas do you think would be most important to the states?
Sure, Mark. First, let me say I agree with everything Bill just said. He raises great questions, and his successes are examples of why we at APHL are so happy FDA leadership includes Genome Tracker in the new era for Smarter Food Safety Blueprint. And we also appreciate, of course, the funding opportunity available through FDA's new laboratory flexible funding model and the new Genome Tracker laboratories joining the network through that mechanism. That said, we do see areas for growth. I mentioned big data already. The public health data infrastructure is struggling to handle the data produced by modern technologies like whole genome sequencing. We are often using inefficient systems that hinder the flow of information. And we hope FDA can invest heavily to improve infrastructure from hardware and data flow to the bioinformatics workforce. Additionally, the bioinformatics pipeline should be as push button as possible with tools to help states use markers like virulence factors and antimicrobial resistance genes to impact regulatory action and outbreak investigations in real time. We like to see partnerships between state laboratories and academic institutions, like the ones that participate in Genome Tracker. Such linkages can lead to sharing of bioinformatics capacity, perhaps specimen collections, and expertise in complex data analysis. More broadly, clinical microbiology is undergoing a different major revolution. Diagnostic tests that use nucleic acid-based methods, which are called culture-independent diagnostic tests, are making it possible for physicians to quickly obtain information about what is making their patients sick, which is great, right? We all want that, of course. But this shift impacts networks and systems that are based on genomic comparison of isolates. The development of metagenomics approaches, those that allow us to characterize pathogens directly from specimens, will speed up the foodborne analytical surveillance process. And the same can be said about food samples. Approaches such as amplicon sequencing and shotgun metagenomics and others are being explored, all with the potential to significantly increase the speed and effectiveness of investigations. One final thought comes to mind here, just to acknowledge that addressing systemic improvements in the food safety system is an ambitious undertaking, right? APHL is really excited to see FDA advancing the conversation, and we look forward to working together to make the food supply safer through strong science, data analysis, and smart regulation.
Thank you, Sherry. So let's move over to Afrina. Let's hear from you talk about the application of this and kind of your crystal ball moment. And, you know, what do you think are the important questions in your world and the produce food manufacturing processing space that we're going to be able to answer in the next 3 to 5 years using WGS technology? And, you know, you had mentioned before about the cost, the challenges associated with this in industry. And I'll flip that and say, if you had a magic wand, right, and plenty of resources, dollars, people to do it, what would you like to see done with the WGS technology in the industry?
Yeah, so if I had a magic wand, I'd take away all those hurdles, right? But I think, you know, whole genome sequencing can definitely help us answer some key questions related to the presence of hazards and the associated risks in fresh produce growing, harvesting, packing, and processing environments. Questions from a One Health perspective, you know, how does the health of the environment impact the crops that we cultivate in that environment? How do animals and animal agriculture adjacent to or near plant crop production areas impact the safety of these fresh produce crops? How do pathogens move within the production environment? How long do they persist, and what contributes to their environmental persistence? What are the vehicles of transmission that we haven't considered? I think whole genome sequencing can help us answer these and other important questions. And there's ongoing research in this area to fill the knowledge gap. I'm also hopeful that we can address some of the uncertainties around the legal and regulatory implications in the near future. This is a significant barrier to widespread adoption of whole genome sequencing in the produce industry. I often read about how whole genome sequencing helped to implicate an operation in a foodborne outbreak. I wonder if there are examples we could share with the industry that highlight the opposite, when whole genome sequencing helped to clear a company of any wrongdoing. This might help boost confidence in this powerful tool. And lastly, I would aim to educate the industry on what whole genome sequencing can and cannot tell us, and dispel some of the misconceptions around whole genome sequencing. I believe this would encourage the adoption of this tool in root cause analysis and risk assessments to prevent foodborne illness and protect public health. This is our goal here at Western Growers.
Efrain, thank you. Thank you very much. Eric, over to you.
Thank you, Mark. I really just want to thank our guests so much today. Really appreciated all of the insightful answers and comments from our three experts. And as promised, as when we started today, I now want to circle back to Frank Yannis and ask him for his thoughts on today's discussion. Frank, what are you thinking here? What are your key takeaways here, sir?
Hey, thanks, Eric. That's a tough task because there's so much great information presented today and there's so much to unpack. But as I've listened very intently, I kind of summarized three high-level takeaways that I'd like to share with you and the audience. So, and for me, number one, it was that WGS is a game changer for prevention. WGS is a game changer for prevention, and I'm underlining the word prevention because, on the surface, I think many think WGS is intended for public health labs. It's a detection tool, not necessarily prevention. But I think we've heard here real clearly today that prevention and detection are not necessarily linear. There's a circular relationship, and that better detection has clearly led to better prevention. And we're just scratching the surface. That's what's really exciting. You heard how we might couple WGS with big data and look at trends over time, seasonality, answer questions that we don't know about how pathogens move. And so it's a game changer for prevention. The other thing I was struck by was just wait till we couple WGS with other technologies. For example, WGS is allowing us to increasingly find the needles in the haystack. Needles being the pathogens, but we still struggle with the haystacks at times, the production facilities or the foods. And so when we couple WGS with new and emerging technologies such as real-time traceability, how that's going to really accelerate our ability to prevent further illnesses. So that's my first takeaway. The second one was just I'm struck by this analogy. And as I heard, well, I've always believed this, you really made this a little bit clearer to me today. Number two is that food safety is a race. WGS is illustrating this. Food safety is a race between our ability to detect foodborne illnesses and link cases together and our ability to prevent them. And while we've all looked at the incidence of foodborne disease over the past couple of decades, and by and large, we've said it's flat and we're not making progress, some of that is clearly because we're getting better at detecting foodborne illnesses, and that's a real good thing. But we can't use that as a crutch, and we have to. If you heard today's conversation, you walk away saying we have to accelerate prevention. And just like the public health infrastructure has leveraged new approaches and new technologies such as WGS, we can do the same to accelerate prevention and win the race and bend the curve of foodborne illnesses. And so, I was struck if I were in the private sector, and many of the listeners will know I was not too long ago, I would be convinced that if I think I'm going to do food safety today the way I did it last year, I'm probably falling behind. And so food safety is a race and we have to accelerate prevention. And then my last takeaway was that WGS is a useful tool for both the private and public sector, and emphasizing the private because it's often talked about in the context of the public sector. And you've heard how it's been used clearly to detect outbreaks and illnesses. But you've also heard how it can be and has been a useful tool for industry. In special applications, we heard that, certainly for root cause analysis, for exploration of
niches in a food processing plant or for exploration on closing knowledge gaps on how pathogens migrate outside. And so, you know, I would encourage the private sector really step up, learn more about WGS, and to make sure that it's one of the tools that they add to their toolbox. So with that, I just want to thank our co-host who did a fabulous job and our guests, really impressive group of experts. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. Please visit our Tech Talk podcast page on FDA.gov for updates on the next installment. We'll do this again and information on how to subscribe to this series. And with that, until next time, thanks for listening.